Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to The Naturalist Capitalist. It's actually been about 2 weeks since I did a real episode. I went to Freedom Fest, got in a car accident where I almost died, but everything's back to normal now. So on the other end, you guys have seen this guy around. He's been rather libertarian famous lately. I have Jeremy Kaufman, and I'll just let him introduce himself. How you doing, Jeremy?
Hey, it's great to be here with you. You know, I wear a lot of hats. I'm a Free Stater. I'm on the board of the Free State Project, which is this movement to concentrate libertarians in New Hampshire, where libertarianism is actually winning. I'm the CEO of LBRY, Library and Odyssey, which is one of the best platforms, you know, for watching content and not dealing with, you know, some of the problems of big tech. And I am involved with the Libertarian Party, although I really got some attention there that was disproportionate, I think, to my role. But I am a member of the Libertarian Party, and I'm involved with the Libertarian Party here in New Hampshire. Yeah.
Nice. So let's talk about how you sort of became libertarian famous lately. The New Hampshire Libertarian Party had a Twitter account that you sort of had the keys to, or you had access to at least. And you put out some pretty stark tweets. I was a fan of all of them, by the way. I don't necessarily, I mean, if I were part of the New Hampshire Libertarian Party, I might not want them tweeted out on the official page, but I can't in good conscience say that I didn't like any of the tweets, especially with the content that I put out there, especially stuff related to John McCain. But what was your goal there? Like, what were you thinking when you put them out? Like, I just want to get a reaction and actually get people to pay attention to us, or what was the goal behind that?
Yeah. So I do want to say I'm part of a team here. So it wasn't, you know, just me going, you know, sort of off on my own. There was a committee that, you know, I was working with. So that wasn't me just, you know, kind of being this lone wolf or whatever. In terms of the intent of the messages, I think it's they almost need to be divided into two categories. Those that are sort of provocative and sarcastic, or maybe they are over the line into shit posting in the sense that they're not necessarily advancing a serious policy position. And these would be things like, you know, saying that you know, Fauci and governors deserve punishment, or things like, you know, that it's not a bad that John McCain died, maybe stated more provocatively. I actually think it's more acceptable to dispute those, you know, and I could say why I think that they're okay, but I can kind of understand why people don't like those. The ones that I actually think caused more trouble, right, were actually the ones that are substantive libertarian policy positions, that are unequivocally libertarian policy positions, which was the ones about child labor and the ones about repealing certain aspects of the Civil Rights Act. Right. And in the case of the child labor one, someone called up Gary Johnson and said, Gary, you got to log on to Twitter and reply to this. Right. Because Gary came on and replied, and Gary's not on Twitter all the time. Right. He didn't stumble across that. Someone told him to go reply. Right. And these are so these are unequivocally libertarian positions. And so I think, you know, when those I'm going to go to bat much harder for, because I think the Libertarian Party needs to be advancing these ideas, because they're what we believe. And they're actually things that more people believe than I think is recognized, right? Like if you look at the child labor one, Fox News wrote an article about it, and the comments were nearly universally supportive, right? And libertarians don't believe it's the state's business, right? You were just at Porkfest, and how many kids did you see doing child labor at Porkfest?
Yeah.
A lot. It's really cool. You know, I wanted to work from a really young age. I was probably about 11 or 12 when I wanted to get a job. I got a paper route as soon as I could, because, you know, the idea of making money was appealing to me. And that's a good thing. When you're making money, you're contributing to society. You're doing things that people want for the most part, right? Certainly at a younger age, it's pretty tough to be a crony capitalist when you're 13, right? So if you're making money, you're probably doing things that people want. And so, yeah, this is an unequivocally libertarian position. The Civil Rights Act one, again, I actually think this one is arguably the most important of all of them. There's all this debate over wokeness right now and sort of woke ideas capturing institutions. And a ton of the reason that this happens is actually civil rights law. And I could talk about that for 10 minutes. So I don't know how deep you want to go on that subject, but a bunch of the reason that wokeness is winning is due to regulations, is due to laws that are passed by the government. And Republicans are just waging this cultural battle. They're not talking about the actual problems. And right. So, you know, those were intended to be substantive. There were articles, you know, that we backed up with them, right? Like, these weren't just shit posts. You know, you can look at posts from Brian Kaplan or Richard Hanania about the civil rights law one, you know, child labor. There's plenty of posts from Fee and Cato and whoever, you know, pretty much every libertarian institution says that this is a good thing. And so, you know, you can't get mad at the Libertarian Party for saying ideas that are unequivocally libertarian. You know, we can't hide. One of the best things the Libertarian Party can do is shift the Overton window.
I mean, what I did is, after that tweet came out and I just saw it getting a barrage of comments, I went in there and I started giving examples of where child labor laws had screwed up my life when I was a kid. I shouldn't say screwed up, that's a little too extreme, but you know, I started working when I was 16 and it was at a lumber yard, and I was allowed to drive a pickup truck full of lumber, you know, 30 miles away to a job site, but I couldn't use a drill. And I remember there was this time I had to put this giant, it was like a whiteboard up in some room, and I had to use a screwdriver, you know, into studs. And I mean, it was just stupid. Like, I can drive a 3,000-pound vehicle down the road loaded with 500 pounds of lumber, but I can't use a drill. I can't use a saw. You know, I can't use a forklift because I'm not 18. So, you know, I tried to give my own personal stories to back it up. I was actually angry at Gary Johnson because, first of all, like you said, he's never on Twitter doing anything. And all he came on to Twitter to do was to say, this does not represent libertarianism. And it was like, well, no, I mean, maybe you don't like the way he said it. And then it's your job to fill in, you know, examples of how this is true. It's not your job to come in and say, this is not libertarianism, because, hey, buddy, it is libertarianism. Libertarians don't believe in regulating the market. So I agree with you. Like, that really pissed me off more than any nuance that the tweet might have missed or something, was the fact that Gary Johnson, the former libertarian nominee, would jump in and say something about that. It's really dumb.
Yeah. And look, I don't, you know, the thing is, and it's tough, because, and this is something we could also talk a lot about, because, you know, look, Gary's better than 95% of people, right? So on one hand, I don't want to drag this guy down. On the other hand, he doesn't really understand libertarian philosophy. He doesn't understand libertarian ideas. No. You know, he was never able to coherently express what libertarians believe. And so, you know, for him to be saying this isn't libertarianism, I mean, that's exactly the problem. I mean, even whether you're left libertarian or right libertarian, there's no form of libertarianism that says, you know, the state ought to be deciding these things for parents. You know, I agree with you. You know, I think society has become like very infantilizing, you know, not just towards children, but towards people that are actually adults. You know, I want society to be going in the opposite direction. I think we underestimate children and what they're capable of doing and, you know, achieving. And so, you know, I want society to be moving in that direction. I will also say that, like, look, it's sort of better to be controversial than ignored. If there's a debate happening, at least you have a chance to change minds. If you're unwilling to say anything that people disagree with, you know, you have the Joe Jorgensen campaign, you know, which was basically entirely ignored. And if you're willing to say things that are controversial, that have real merit behind them, right? Not controversial for controversial sake, but controversial with some merit behind them, then you have a chance to change minds, because you have the chance to reach people that are, you know, that are open-minded.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think there's ever a place for a distinction between an official Libertarian Party account tweeting something out and just a libertarian tweeting something out, or should it all be the same?
There's probably a distinction. I mean, I think, okay. Here, this may not be exactly answering your comment, but it hopefully is at least obliquely. I think the biggest problem that the Libertarian Party has is it's attempting to ape the status quo. It's attempting to say, you know, this is the way that Republicans or Democrats are behaving, and therefore we should behave this way, and then we'll, you know, achieve their success. Not on policy, of course. Libertarians have different policy perspectives, but in terms of behavior, in terms of decorum, in terms of the way that they're behaving themselves. And I think that this is like the number one most mistaken thing that Libertarian Party does or Libertarian Party officials do. And of course, not universally. The number one thing that I would like these people to understand is that the sort of way in which there's what's the right way to put it? I would call it like a path dependency. Like you're not, people don't survey all of the policy positions of the three parties and then pick the one that they agree with. That's not how people vote, right? People vote for parties that can actually win, and people regard the Libertarian Party as not capable of winning. So even if you had policy positions that were, you know, quote, better than the Democrats and the Republicans, that's not the way that most people are voting. People are tribal. People are joining a tribe, right? And I mean, our political affiliations, they've become like one of the biggest tribal affiliations in the country. So the Libertarian Party is essentially going to people and saying, join the Libertarian Party tribe, right? Join this political tribe. And you're asking people to join your tribe when you have 1 or 2% and the other ones have 48, 49, 50%, right? Which means that you need to be appealing to people who are willing to join you when you're at 2%, right? Like I have some problems with Justin Amash strategically, not as a libertarian. His positions are, as far as I can tell, as libertarian, they're impeccable. But Justin, he always won as a Republican. And when you're running as a Republican, what that means is you're competing for this median of votes. You've already got 40% of people who are going to vote for you. You've already got 40% of people who are never going to vote for you because you're a Republican, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're trying to get this middle ground of people who are actually on the border between the two. Right. That is not where the Libertarian Party is. You are not going to pick most of those people off. You've got to find people who are so disaffected by the status quo or have other aspects of their psychology where they're willing to join a team with a couple of percent, right? And you've got to find those people. And so, you know, I'm from a startup. I have a startup mentality. I've started a number of companies. I've started companies before this, before Library and Odyssey. And it's like the people who fit the profile of your early adopter types are not your middle types. They're not your people who come later. They have a different psychology. They have different behavior. And the Libertarian Party needs to be getting people like that. It needs to be getting the kinds of people who are willing to go first. And that's who we need to be getting. And those kinds of people aren't scared away by controversy. They're not scared away by debate. They're not scared away by something being unpopular, right? And so those are the people that we need. And if we're only, you know, echoing the normal messaging or putting a little twist on it, you're for the most part not going to reach those people. But if you're saying something that's, you know, actually getting the ideas to trend on Twitter, then some of those people, you can actually persuade them. And it's okay. It's okay to put out a message that 75% of people don't like if you can reach some of those 25, because the way that most people like or dislike something is they copy their neighbors, right? And so the path to victory isn't through those people. It's through the people who will decide things without copying their neighbors, because we're at 2%, you know? And so those are the people that you've got to be trying to reach and trying to find.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I like the way you laid that out with someone who's used to running as a Republican and who they're trying to reach versus as if you're actually running as a Libertarian, it is a different game. I think that was well put. I always find it funny when people get lost in the sarcasm or the hyperbole of a shit post when you're trying to make an overall point. So, for instance, the one that you made or you helped make about John McCain's brain tumor, how it saved more lives than Anthony Fauci. I made one today that said, you guys need to come up with a better argument for me not wanting Iran to get a nuclear bomb. You keep saying they're going to nuke Israel. And I'm saying you need to come up with a reason for me not to want to get, you know, so yeah. I don't actually want Iran to nuke Israel. I would kill innocent people. It's the overall point that I do not think Israel is an agent of peace. I do not think they're the good guys over there. I don't think Iran are the bad guys over there. The post about Fauci and the brain tumor is pointing out that John McCain is a piece of shit and so is Fauci. And, you know, people just the literalists get lost on these things. And I just think it's hilarious. But I do think it reaches the intended crowd, like people who understand the overall meaning are out there. When they see it, I think they appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And you want to be reaching people who are frustrated by the status quo. Part of the problem is in terms of, and of course not universally, but some of the people that have power or influence in the Libertarian Party, they have the mentality of the of other politicians, but they're in the Libertarian Party because they were unable to succeed there. And I'm not saying that they don't actually have genuinely different beliefs, but in the sense that, like, there are these people who are like, they want the political process to be respected. You know, they're very serious and this kind of thing. And those aren't the path to winning, right? People who are really serious about winning, they're going to go and join the Democrats or the Republicans. Or when it comes to libertarians, I think more often the ones that seriously want to win do join the Republicans. Not trying to say that the Republican Party is good, but there is, you know, maybe 5 to 10% of it that is libertarian, right? And those are the people who wanted to win. They went and joined the Republican Party, and so you're left with people who, you know, didn't do that for whatever reason. And I think you sometimes have these people who, like, have the serious mentality, but also don't have the corresponding ability. Yeah. I mean, we could talk about Israel as well. I certainly get why, you know, people have a problem with it. Israel's not a libertarian society. I think Israel does a lot wrong. I think that, as a libertarian, I actually take some inspiration from Israel, and I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of boos having just said that. But you know, in the sense that this is like, I want a libertarian homeland. It's why I'm a free stater, right? And Israel is one of the best success stories of a nation being founded by a group of people who had a set of roughly coherent beliefs. They were a tribe and they managed to start a country, right? Mm-hmm. And as a libertarian, I want that to happen. I want to live in a country that holds libertarian values. I do not think that is ever going to happen in America, right? I think as a libertarian, America is a near 250 years of straight downward trajectory. And so in that sense, not defending some of Israel's policy positions, but in the sense that, hey, Jews managed to start.
Yeah, you like the you like the idea of banding together with people of like-minded opinions.
Yeah. And look, I think, again, not defending the specific things that Israel does necessarily. Sure. The idea that Jews can have a nation, I think that's beautiful. I think if Christians want to have a nation, if any group of people wants to have a nation, they should be allowed to have it. There's so much space on earth, and we spend so much time trying to dominate one another instead of trying to figure out, hey, how can we divide this territory up and each have our own way? I said on Twitter recently that, like, I'm more allied with a communist who wants it locally than a libertarian who wants it globally. And you know, that is very much my sentiment. I see libertarianism as something that I personally believe. I believe it fervently. I don't care if you agree with me. I'm not trying to say that I have the moral high ground all the time. I just want to live this way. And Jews just want to live this way. And yes, now the problem may be the Jews wanting to live that way suppresses Palestinians or other people who want to live their way. And so you know, we have to figure out a way to resolve those the best way that we can. But I wish everyone could adapt this, you know, this perspective of, hey, how can we all live the way that we want to as much as possible, because we don't agree on how to live, we don't agree on religion, we don't agree on political philosophy, we don't agree on all these things, but there's so much space. So, you know, maybe we could sort ourselves out a little more.
Yeah, Dave Smith made a hilarious joke at Freedom Fest about how they should have put Israel in Canada and no one would have even known they were there, which I think that's got a good point. But I agree with you, like this idea of trying to convince everybody to leave each other alone is not going to work. This phrase that we used to throw around, and I still hear it occasionally, is, you know, most people are libertarians, they just don't know it yet. That is bullshit. Most people are authoritarians with no power. You know, they either want to have someone tell them what to do, or they want to tell someone else what to do. You know, the people like you and me who just want to be in control of ourselves, there's very few of us. So this would be a good segue into the Free State Project. So I grew up in New Hampshire. I was born there, raised there, and I've lived there most of my life. I moved away for a couple of years, and then I moved back, and then I just moved again a little over a year ago. I don't think it's that free. And I'm wondering, like, why not Wyoming, where there's so few people there, where it seems like we really could take it over? I mean, New Hampshire has a constant influx of progressives from Massachusetts and New York who are escaping their hellholes and then just trying to turn New Hampshire back into, or, you know, turn it into what they escaped from. New Hampshire has pretty good gun laws and there's no income tax, but then they make up for it in property tax. There is no sales tax to be that too. The drug laws are really bad. You know, it's got some of the worst drug abuse in the country because of the drug laws there. So as a New Hampshire native, someone who knows the state inside and out, try to sell it to me. Why should I come back? Like, it might be easy to sell to someone who doesn't know much about it, but why should Reed Coverdale move back to New Hampshire?
Well, there's a lot to respond to there. I mean, I think in terms of, I'll engage with sort of some of the policy specifics first, but I actually think the policy specifics aren't the primary argument. Okay. But I think that, so I mean, in taxes, New Hampshire is generally ranked as first or second lowest taxes. There is no sales tax, there is no income tax. The quote right. secret income tax of the interest and dividend tax, so not an income tax, but interest and dividends, basically investment tax, that was literally just repealed this year. It was repealed by Free Staters. A Free Stater is the Speaker of the House. So not just an elected Republican. He is the Speaker of the House of the state legislature. He is a Free Stater. Okay. The gun laws are very good in general. I mean, so you can question the organization, but Cato rates New Hampshire as either the first or second freest state. It tends to bounce back and forth between one and two. After this latest session, I would be very surprised if we aren't number one because it was amazing. We banned vaccine passports the real way. We banned government vaccine passports. Private property owners can still do what they want, but the government can't discriminate on this basis. We just cut taxes and spending. So we didn't just cut taxes, we also cut spending. Drug laws, they're not particularly draconian. Like, people say that Texas is a more free state. New Hampshire's drug laws are way better than Texas. And part of the reason that New Hampshire doesn't have, quote, legal weed is the Liberty reps don't want to create a new bureaucracy around marijuana. So they are holding out and saying, we want full, I always get decriminalization and legalization mixed up, so I want to use the right word, but the one where, we're just saying, hey, weed's legal, right? It's not a new regulatory system. New Hampshire just passed school choice. Corey DeAngelis called it one of the best school choice bills in the country. So you can now get something like $5,000, $6,000 a year.
And you mind if I just cut in for a second? Yeah. So wasn't there an election like right after I left last year sometime that you guys really swept?
Yes. Yeah, Free Staters killed it. So it's Free Stater electoral victories have just been trending upwards. I mean, it bounces around a little bit, but generally they've been trending upwards since the Free State Project chose New Hampshire. But this last session was a record. Over 40 Free Staters were elected to the state legislature. And there is an entire political machine here at this point. And that's not the Free State Project. All the Free State Project does is try to advertise. There are other institutions. There's the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance. There's the 603 Alliance. There's Get Involved PAC. There's Young Americans for Liberty, a quarter of their victories were in New Hampshire. Of their national victories, a quarter of them were in New Hampshire. So when I
was there, like right after I left, red flag laws had just passed the House and the Senate, and I think Sununu ended up vetoing them. So that would not happen again now. That would be impossible.
Yeah, I do not think that would happen again. There was basically, so New Hampshire is a decently Republican state, but it's not a very Trumpian Republican state. And because it's, I don't know, to me, New Hampshire feels very old school. It almost feels like, America, where America was when I was like 10, in the sense that like people have a much larger belief in civics and civic response. Sort of, it's a very Justin Amash school, in the sense that they have a lot of respect for the institutions. And so there were people who were relatively libertarian who were very put off by Trump because of Trump's, decorum and these kinds of things. And so I actually think Trump made New Hampshire look more Democratic, than it actually is.
Yeah. Give that guy a raise, by the way. He's shouting out praise to you. So.
Yeah. And look, Wyoming, in terms of Wyoming or other states, look, libertarian concentration is the way. If you want to move to Wyoming because you think the libertarian concentration movement will succeed there, I mean, I'm not going to shame you. Like, libertarians need to get out of New York. They need to get out of California. Like, we have to physically concentrate. I think New Hampshire there's a lot of momentum behind New Hampshire. And again, New Hampshire's population is only a little bit over 1 million people. So it's very feasible for us to take over this state.
I thought it was 1 point. Is it 1.8 or 1.2? I thought it was like 1.8 million.
I thought it was like, I think maybe it's 1.4. I don't think it's much higher than that. Let's just look it up.
1.4 almost. Yeah.
1.4. And
that's lower than I thought it was.
Yeah, and so it's very viable to take over. The fact that there are other states near us, it makes it easier, not harder. It's much harder to relocate your life to Wyoming. You know, we get the people from, we get libertarians from Massachusetts and Vermont and New York and Connecticut. It's way easier to move to New Hampshire than it is to move to Wyoming. I actually think the thing about Massachusetts is a complete myth. My attempts
to moving up for.
Yeah. No, look, there's no doubt that there are liberals that move here. They tend to move to the Portsmouth Seacoast area, and they do tend to come from other mid-Atlantic states. But specifically the types of people moving from Massachusetts, they tend to be more libertarian than average. They tend to be frustrated by Massachusetts gun laws and Massachusetts taxes. And what they do is they move right over the border in New Hampshire to areas like Nashua and just generally the southern border of the state. And it's actually been turning the southern border of the state red because they're getting out of Massachusetts. So I know it is a stereotype. I think it's not a true, the Massachusetts specifically, I think that stereotype is false. I think it is true that we get liberals moving from Connecticut and so on. But if also, again, if you look at population changes, Florida got a way larger population influx. Texas got a way larger population influx. New Hampshire's population in 2020 borderline didn't move. So we're not seeing this flux of people coming in the way that Florida and Texas are. And those are states that are way harder to take over. We're good on COVID, but they're generally just Republican states. They're back the blue states. They're anti-immigration states. You know, they're not actually libertarian states. They were just good on COVID, right? And so, I think New Hampshire is the best bet. We've got to concentrate. It's more important that we agree on where. Like, even if New Hampshire was the third best choice. Well, there's a ton of momentum here at this point, right? Like, it's really happening. And everyone is aware of it. The Democrats rail against free staters. The progressives rail against free staters. Like, libertarians are ignored in every other place. Here we are, a real political power. There is a recorded phone call from the governor. It was leaked. This was supposed to be the governor talking to elected Republicans. It was supposed to be a secret phone call, and people leaked it. And the governor was ranting, and he was like, "We can't let libertarians take over this state." And he was talking about free staters. Okay. Like, it is unreal the amount of power that libertarians are achieving here. Now, are we completely in power? We're not. Is this an unprecedented amount of power for libertarians to achieve? It is. that libertarians have basically no power anywhere. There, you've got like Thomas Massie and Rand Paul, who are like borderline libertarians. I mean, I think they're libertarians. You know, and that's it. And they're not winning. No. They're nope. playing defense. We are playing offense.
Yeah, well, you make some good points. When I left, as I said, you know, they were getting ready to pass red flag laws, and I hadn't seen small government really winning in any form. But, I mean, it sounds like the last year and a half, which I've been gone for and I haven't been paying attention, you guys have made a lot of progress. My family lives in New Hampshire, but they're not very politically involved. So, yeah, I don't know. I will keep that in mind, man. Where can people check out the Free State Project anyway?
So we have a website at fsp.org. You can follow us on Twitter at Free State NH. The number one thing that I recommend is like, look, it's a big proposition to move here. So I'm not asking for you to buy it. What I would say is if you think there is even a 5% chance that this is the way, come for a visit. We have a form that you can fill out at fsp.org/visit. We'll give you like basically a sort of customized tour. Not everything is public that's going on, and we'll introduce you to your kinds of people. So if you're really into firearms, if you're really into blockchain, if you're really into, I don't know, if you're really into board games, it doesn't matter, right? There's every cohort. If you're an agorist, right, there's a huge agorism scene, right? So I talked a lot about politics because I want to win politically. There is a huge agorism scene. I mean, there are farm, what we call farmers markets, but you know, they get a little grayer or blacker than that. There are these markets where you can go where there are only Free Staters there, and you can find all kinds of things, you know, for sale, buy and trade, pay in crypto, pay in cash. You know, and this is one of the best parts of it, is that you can have a social network, you can have a community that's entirely people that share your values, right? You know, I have three young boys. They almost exclusively hang out with other Free Stater children, right? They're gonna grow up in a community that's a libertarian community. And I think that's really powerful. And there's a lot of kids here. There's a lot of families, a lot of parents.
Yeah. It is a great place to live. I will give you that. You know, I don't recommend libertarians move to Utah. I don't think that we have too great of a chance here. It's a completely different battle than it would be in a progressive state, but I wouldn't bother. So tell us a little about Library and Odyssey. Did you actually start Odyssey, or was it you and some friends? What drove the idea? How did that come about?
Sure. So we started Library well before we started Odyssey, but I'll start by talking about Odyssey because it's easier to understand. Okay. So odyse.com. It's a YouTube-like website, but with way better policy. A lot of people say it's like YouTube was 5 or 10 years ago. There's an incredible roster of creators on there. Brett Weinstein has been doing exclusive live streams on there.
Ryan Dawson's on there.
Ryan Dawson's on there. Yeah. Liberty Lockpod is on there. Drew Hancock's actually working for the company now, but he's also on there. I mean, all the libertarians are on there. Almost every libertarian is on there. But also, you know, we have several hundred YouTubers with a million or more subscribers. So it's not like a libertarian thing. We're talking about tens of millions of pieces of content. It's used by several million people every day to go and watch videos. And so that's the easiest thing to understand, right? Is Odyssey is just a website. It's also an app. You can get the app. It's just a sort of more friendly. We're not spying on you. We're not exploiting you, all this stuff. It's all open source. Odyssey is actually an application built on, this is going to get nerdy. I'm not going to nerd it out for too long. If you are a computer science nerd, you can dig in more on your own. But Odyssey is built on top of a blockchain-based protocol called Library, LBRY. And so Library does to publishing what Bitcoin does to money. So it allows you to have local ownership of your publishing identity. It means that, you know, earnings settle immediately and go into your wallet. It really allows you to have a level of ownership of how you communicate and publish and interact online. That's really unprecedented. That's novel. That couldn't have existed before. It's a very well vetted technology. We have it's been vetted by IEEE, the engineering organization. It's been live for, about 5 years, a little over 5 years. The technology has been live. And so it's like a very, very sort of like stable, reliable technology. It's all decentralized. I think I already said all the code is open source. And so, for the nerds or the computer scientists, they can dig into library. For everyone else, you can just go on to Odyssey and have a much better experience than you would on YouTube.
All right. Yeah. Everyone go check out Odyssey. I will be over there soon. My only excuse is that, I was supposed to do it a couple weekends ago, and then Clint ended up showing up here early, and we went to South Dakota together. That's when I got in the accident and everything. I haven't had a free day, but I will get over there as soon as I can. So wanted to talk a little bit about this. I was not a fan of yours when I first found out about you. I definitely am now. I saw you on the Fakertarians podcast, got to meet you at Porkfest, and I've seen a lot of your stuff over the last couple months, and I've become a fan. I think Twitter is not a good way to meet people, but I remember one of the first tweets of yours that I saw. It was something about how if the state were removed and 1,000 trans people were still killed every year. Do you remember the exact wording off the top of your head?
I don't, but I'm happy to admit that I put my foot in my mouth on that one a little bit. What I was trying to say
if you'll just let me, like, I didn't even disagree with the merit of what you were saying necessarily, because I agree. If you got rid of the state, then the genocide in Yemen ends, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, the war on drugs, like so many horrible things would end. So it would be better if 1,000 trans people were killed every month, that would still be better than the state that exists today. Nick Sarwark also said something along the lines of, as far as mandates go, I forget what mandate Biden made like 3 or 4 months ago. He made some mandate, and Nick Sarwark said, as far as mandates go, that's not the worst one he could have made. So again, it's like, okay, that's not untrue, but it's just like, why would you say that? And that was the same way I felt about your tweet, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go to bat that hard for that one. What I was trying to say is what I think you've picked up on, which is that, the state is far more evil than what happens to trans people. I mean, I think I'm not going to say that transphobic people don't exist. I think it's like largely overblown. I think a lot of the statistics around, trans people aren't actually, murdered at these, egregious rates or things like this. I think that's like largely false. And I think that, I'm very resistant to the libertarian, movement being this sort of like identity politics driven movement. I'm very opposed to identity politics. And I probably said something that was, a little bit awkward or poorly phrased. But what I was trying to say is that the United States government has killed 800,000 people in the Middle East alone. And that is like way, way, way larger problem than transphobia. And right. My view of libertarianism is not this. What I think is so beautiful about libertarianism is it lets everyone live the way that they want. I'm not a social conservative. I think people I think trans people who want to have group marriages and, whatever, like libertarianism allows that. Libertarianism also allows people to have ethno communities. It allows all of it. That's part of what's so beautiful about it, is when you have strong private property rights, people can live according to their values, right? Personally, I'm in favor of a relatively social, progressive, certainly multicultural society, one that's very live and let live. I think that the Libertarian Party had like basically adopted these social views as like objectively correct, rather than allowing them to happen. And those are two very different stances. And I think the Libertarian Party would be better. Like, take the people who are against gay marriage, right? Now, that was a big thing. We're similar ages, right? So you remember how big of a fight that was, where conservatives were, this was a terrible thing, and gays can't be allowed to marry. And even Obama was against gay marriage. It's crazy to think that literally a decade ago, we had a Democratic president who was against gay marriage. And it shows how fast the progressives are able to win on these social issues. But like, libertarians should be reaching out to people who are against gay marriage and being like, yeah, you want to have a society that's where gay marriage isn't allowed? Libertarianism allows you to do that. And I want to live in a society where gays are allowed to marry, to be clear. But we should be trying to reach not, quote, the remnant in whatever that classic sense is, but all the remnants, everyone who has become politically homeless because there's only two flavors of what's allowed. Libertarianism allows 1,000 flavors of what's allowed. That's what's amazing about the philosophy. And I want us to be seeing, rather than being like, hey, you know, trans rights are human rights. Like, what the fuck is that shit? I don't know what that even means. Okay. Mm-hmm. Libertarianism allows trans people to live as they want. Libertarianism allows homophobic people to live as they want and transphobic people to live as they want and every person to allow how they want. That is what's awesome about libertarianism. And that's the message that I want to see boosted, not being, you know, Democrat light or Democrat plus or whatever you want to call it, like, instead being like, we enable all of it, and that's what's awesome. And so I'm really resistant and disparaging of these people who try to wrap up, and whether it's the religious people or the id poll people, or libertarianism is this. No, it's not. Libertarianism is property rights, bodily autonomy, and voluntary association. And that's all that it is. And that leads to all kinds of outcomes. And that means that you're okay with those outcomes because you get the outcomes that you want.
Yeah, I could not agree with that assessment more. I've talked about how libertarianism is about tolerance, not acceptance. But to a point, you're even right. Like, if communities want to self-segregate, if they want to be all black or all gay or all white or whatever, why is there anything wrong with that? You know, I don't particularly want that. Like, I like variety of, you know, with everything. But if a group of people really want their own identity to be in a small community, like, who are we to stop them? We do have this built into our minds that that's not okay. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I think that an incredible amount of politics is actually about dominance. It's about dominating others. And I mean, COVID is a great example of this, where we want to pretend that we're helping other people, but what we're actually interested in is dominating them.
Yeah, for sure. So when it comes to like radical ideas or in-your-face messaging, it seems like a lot of people on Twitter, because that's where I interact with them, they're okay with one type of radical messaging, if it's like sort of right-leaning or religious or something. But as soon as you go after a couple sacred cows, they just lose it. And this happened to me a few weeks ago. And I didn't even make these jokes, but some anti-Christian jokes were made, and people just lost their shit over it. And to me, that was very hypocritical. If you're someone who is going to stand for free speech or free ideas, free association, whatever, like, if you're going to be fine with certain demographics being trodden over, but then you just clutch your pearls as soon as your sacred cows show up, then you're a hypocrite. I was wondering, what was your thought about that whole kerfuffle?
Yeah, I don't know if I think I caught like a little bit of the one you're talking about specifically, but I don't think I saw all of it. I mean, I'm inclined to agree with you. Like, if you're okay with people being, you know, saying very provocative things in this one area, you can't get mad at them when they say something provocative that, you know, that you disagree with. That's kind of the nature of it. And we're not gonna agree on everything. You know, we're not gonna agree on religion. We're not gonna agree on various social issues. And, you know, that's why I think that, like, we should, if we're going to, as libertarians, if we're going to, you know, sort of fight one another, I would really prefer that it's only over that very, very tiny kernel of things that we're supposed to all believe, which again to me is private property, bodily autonomy, voluntary association. That's my most concise expression of what libertarianism is. So that means that, like, look, if someone says something that was offensive to you about religiousness or about various social issues, like, it's I'll open up about one of these myself. I've ended up in this group of, like, the libertarian, like, you know, shit posters and the provocative people and so on, and like they like to use words like gay or fag as pejoratives. I actually don't like that. I don't use those words that way. I haven't in probably, I don't know, two decades, and I'm not inclined to start again. And it's like, but I don't care. Like, they want to, I don't care. So I'm not gonna, like, it's not gonna bother, and I'm not gonna get mad at them over that. It doesn't really, like, bother me, but I'm not gonna do it myself, right? But I'm not going to draw lines in the sand over that issue. I try very hard not to draw lines in the sand. I feel like I've had all these people draw lines in the sand against me. And, like, that's not my way. I have very few people. I don't really regard anyone as my enemy. Even someone like Nick Sarwark or whoever, like, they're not my enemy. I want to work with them. Nick is closer to me than the vast majority of people. These people who want to, this fighting with amongst ourselves, you know, I don't really like it. Even if I'm occasionally giving, you know, shitposting or whatever, like, I really don't want us to be fighting. I want us to be working together. You know, someone who's like a neocon, who's like an authoritarian leftist, like, these people are so much farther away than we are. Like, that is the enemy. Let's keep the fire over there. One thing we can do is, like, not reward people who crap on other libertarians too much. Again, I can't really necessarily always cast the first stone here. I'm not going to say I haven't at times, like, replied in snarky ways or whatever, but we want to, if anything, be, like, discouraging that than be rewarding the people who are, you know, fighting the real enemy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I try to punch up. I try to take on the actual enemy and the people that are really evil. And when you do that, you actually see a lot of rallying among libertarians, because they realize, wow, this guy's actually onto something. This guy's actually taking on the real evil, because the infighting is just so petty after a while. It is over really stupid shit. It's low hanging fruit, like these lulberts or these people who get offended over everything. After a while, it's not gratifying to make fun of them anymore. I mean, because they are pretty irrelevant. Their issues that they have are pretty dumb. You know, try to end up on Siraj's list or bad COVID-19 takes, or, you know, like, try to do that instead, because that's, in my mind, more impressive if you're getting noticed by big people, or, you know, have Open Secrets call you, you know, one of the most prolific Jew haters on Twitter or something like that. You know, like, if you're rattling those cages, I feel like you're, you know, you're actually accomplishing something instead of just making fun of Archie for the 400th time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I completely agree with you. And LPNH made Siraj's list 2 weeks running. So, you know, that is an achievement. So
I just want to read this one. On a scale of 1 to Pete Quinones, never go full Jeremy Kaufman. Good stuff, gents. You are dead on. I like that.
Yeah. Look, I like Pete. I mean, I think he's
I do too.
He's saying, I think he's more provocative, more provocative than I am. I do get crap for being provocative in a way that I think I try to be provocative. Well, not always, but I'd like to think that I'm being provocative in ways that are important. And one of the ways that I've tried to be provocative that I think is especially important is, like, sort of waking up to the fact, and I think you're very cognizant of this, is that libertarianism is not a popular idea, and most people are not going to be persuaded into it in this sort of rational sense, right? And, like, I am a much bigger fan of sort of fighting for libertarian acceptance and almost a sort of libertarian identity politics type movement, in the sense that, like, libertarians are a sort of different type of person, and we deserve to be respected even if we're a minority. So, mm-hmm. like, libertarians should be allowed to opt out of Social Security because we're different. In the same ways that gays should be allowed to marry, libertarians should be allowed to opt out of Social Security. Mm-hmm. Or you should sort of be able to declare, I'm a libertarian and I have these beliefs. Like, libertarians literally subjectively experience events differently than other people. Most people did not find lockdown morally offensive. Most people do not find taxation like morally offensive. You know, I find doing it legitimately like hurts my psyche when I have to fill out my tax forms, because it's like, not only are they taking this money from me, but they're making me fill out a form about it. And it pains me. It is like one of the most psychologically, and maybe you can say I live a pampered life or whatever, but I think it's also partially that I have this different psychology, because it is like legitimately painful when I have to do my taxes. It feels so bad to me, right? And not even about the amount of money. It's like the fact that, like, you know, this person is forcing me to fill out these forms and I have to do these things, right? I feel the same way, you know, about the money coming out of my Social Security check. I feel the same way about the, you know, various aspects of healthcare and healthcare exchanges, like the fact that I had to like sign up for healthcare or I was going to get charged money. Like, you know, it was literally psychologically painful. And that is not a normal experience. Most people don't feel that way. And instead of like trying to convince people, like, we should recognize that a lot of people aren't like us. And whether that is, I mean, I think libertarian concentration is the best answer. So libertarian Zionism is a way I've put it before, but I stopped saying it because people didn't like it. you know, like, but that is it. And so either we either need to concentrate and have our own society, or we need to be recognized as a unique, you know, a different type of person from others. And we need to have different rights. You need to be able to say, hey, I'm a libertarian, you know, and I experience things differently. And maybe I still have to do, you know, certain things that other people have to do, but I should be allowed more risk and more responsibility or whatever it is. But this idea that, like, you know, we're going to persuade people to feel like this, I don't think it's ever going to happen. I just don't think it's ever going to happen. The only way libertarianism has been achieved in the past is from people you're going off somewhere else and going and being libertarian. And so I do think that's the best way forward, whether it's free state or private cities or other stuff. But if it's not that, we have to have some movement that says, hey, you know, we're here, we exist, and we deserve to be recognized. Because we're not going to, I don't know, I'm very skeptical that we're going to ever win elections. We're going to win the president. We're not, because it's not even enough to win the presidency. Let's say Dave Smith is the nominee, and through some, you know, incredible, you know, he's so charismatic, incredible fluke, and I don't know, everyone has scandals, and Dave's the president. How much changes? Because Dave doesn't run Congress. Dave doesn't run the Senate. Dave doesn't run the judiciary, right? Like, I'm sure it would be the best 4 years America has ever seen. Don't get me wrong, but it's not. America wouldn't become libertarian even with 4 years of a libertarian president.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, the libertarian Zionism, we're not going to be kicking 750,000 Palestinians out of New Hampshire if you move there. So, you know, it's a better version. But yeah, you know, I really liked what you said about Cuba. I think it was last week, because so many libertarians are freaking out about what's going on in Cuba. And I do have to draw this distinction here. I talk about what's going on in Israel because our taxes fund what's happening in Israel. They do not fund what's happening in Cuba unless there's a CIA coup going on there, which there could be. But we do not fund the Cuban government like we do the Israeli government. So they're two separate things to me. But for libertarians to be so angry about Cuba's government and how Cubans are treated while we're living in the United States with all the lockdowns and all the civil liberty infringements that we're having, we need to clean our own house first. And to your point, we're probably not even going to clean the whole house. We probably need to find a room that we'll be safe in, where we can find like-minded people who don't want to infringe on each other. But it just shows, like, I don't know, the fact that so many people care about what's going on in Cuba instead of going on here just showed me that there's been so much brainwashing to think that we need to fix the world while our country is such a mess. You know, this is actually biblical. You know, take the log out of your own eye before you remove the speck from your neighbor's eye. We really need to take some of that advice.
Yeah. Put your own house in order first, or whatever the quote is. Yeah. I mean, I 100% agree. And, you know, I tried to find polls on this. I couldn't find them. I guess that Cuba is not a state of a, you know, sort of sufficient stature where the citizens are being polled. But I don't, you know, I know there were some marches and stuff. I don't believe that most Cubans are libertarian. No. I don't believe that. I bet most of them are socialists the same way that most Americans are socialists, in the sense that they want government to redistribute things and to solve these problems and, you know, and all of these things. And, you know, what it mostly was is virtue signaling. You know, people want to signal that, oh, I care so much about liberty and freedom that I want to help the Cubans. And I think that's what was driven it. But I wouldn't give I would not give charity to Cuba. What I would like to do is achieve, you know, some space that's relatively libertarian, and we can invite libertarian Cubans to come and live with us. I mean, this is, I don't know if this is too controversial of a topic to bring up when we're maybe running out of time, but like I'm very for open borders in principle, and I certainly think people should always be allowed to leave. I mean, one of the problems is that whether we see this under democracy for sure, but even under a sort of anarcho-capitalist type structure where you're dealing with, you know, dispute resolution organizations or whatever your framework is that's sort of supplanting the current legal structures, if the vast majority of people don't hold libertarian views, then the structures will produce anti-libertarian outcomes, mm-hmm. right? Like, and so if you have a population where everyone, you know, where there's substantial preference for vaccine passports and people are willing to spend their resources to produce them, even in an anarcho-capitalist society, you're going to get that as an outcome. And sure. So, you know, if we're talking about achieving a libertarian society, like, I think that does mean we have to find some way of sort of securing it and it staying libertarian. And I don't mean building a wall, but like, you have to have some way of this happening, because otherwise, you have the American experiment playing out a second time over. And like, America started as the most libertarian nation in centuries, right? And democracy and people moving here that didn't share those liberty values eroded that to the point that it is an extremely socialist nation. And so, you know, I'm not advocating something here specifically, but like, if you're, you know, you certainly don't want to replay the American experiment and create a libertarian society and then invite a bunch of people in who aren't libertarian, and then it's not a libertarian society again, you know?
So you got to make them uncomfortable, or
I don't have strong answers. I don't have strong answers here. Right. But if you have an incredibly prosperous society and you have a bunch of people come in whose values are not libertarian, then it won't take much of an event or some sort of populist or other type of person, and all of a sudden it's not libertarian. And so this is not
level with, like, I mean, it's kind of what I was talking. I mean, according to you, the liberty people are winning in New Hampshire, but with Texas or Florida or a lot of these, you know, Georgia, you know, a lot of states that have been traditionally very Republican, a lot of people are fleeing out of their progressive states and then infecting those states they move to with more progressivism.
Yeah. To me, I'm like just posing a puzzle. I'm not pushing a policy or an outcome. Sure, yeah. Like, basically, like, suppose that, because this is just something, I don't know, I'm a very forward thinking person, so I think about the free state. Let's suppose the Free State Project continues to win. How do we prevent that from happening? And this is true, even you know, it's obviously hard under a democracy, but even without democracy, even if you're talking about, again, like an anarcho-capitalist society, like an anarcho-capitalist society produces laws, maybe not literally laws, produces
societal norms.
If people are willing to spend their resources to force outcomes on others, then those outcomes will happen. And so if you want a society in which people are general, like, you know, basically just sort of this, the general idea that like culture is upstream of politics. And so this idea that, you know, if you're not concerned about culture and having a culture that shares liberty values, then, you know, I think that it's always going to sort of be at risk of crumbling.
Yeah. To me, that's actually why we have to, I mean, it's almost the opposite of what you're saying. Maybe not the opposite. Maybe it can go hand in hand, but the outreach toward people who have goals, but they have the wrong idea of how to get there. If we can show them that liberty is the way for their goals to be met, then they'll embrace it. I mean, I think a prime example of this is Mexicans. I think Mexicans are very friendly toward libertarianism in general. They're very hard workers. They're very, they're very conservative people in a lot of ways, you know, but it's just, the left has done so much outreach toward that demographic, and they've actually made it harder for them in reality, but they've just catered to them so much that if you're a Mexican immigrant, you just automatically assume, oh, I have to be a progressive or whatever. I think that's where libertarians can actually step in and really create a home for a lot of people who don't really believe in these progressive ideas. I mean, there's somewhere for outreach, but also for what you're saying of trying to bring like-minded people together. But if you're only bringing like-minded people together and you don't have any outreach to try to expand your brand at all, then you are going to be ultimately taken over and you're going to be outbred and you're not going to last. Right.
Yeah. And I'm all for that. I mean, I think one thing that libertarians don't, again, not painting with a broad brush, I think plenty do get it, but something that some libertarians miss, let's put it this way, is that like, a lot of people are not nearly as independently minded as they are. You know, most people go along to get along. You know, most people sort of adopt the values of society, you know, of the society that they're in. And so it's really about having a large enough density of people who are like resolutely libertarian, who understand the ideas through and through and are committed to expressing them, and having them not just, and also having them be in, not installed, but like they're the people who are, you know, they're, I don't want to use the word elites necessarily, but like they're the people in the society that other people are looking up to and admiring. And then those, you know, people will copy their values. I mean, most people don't have a philosophy. Most people don't have any kind of coherent, you know, sure, worldview. You know, most people are attempting to succeed locally in the sort of, you know, framework or patchwork that they're embedded within, and they're not thinking too much about the bigger picture. And so this is also part of why, you know, in terms of why, I mean, this actually, to tie it back to the Free State Project, it's also part of why the Free State Project can work, and how you see like even 40 elected legislators are able to pull the entire Republican Party to be more libertarian, because they're really smart people, they're really articulate people, and they're like, you know, they're pulling people to be with them. You know, I pull my neighbors to be with me. I pull other people to be with me because I believe these things resolutely. I'm a respectable, a theoretically respectable person, you know, and I express them, you know, boldly and confidently. And that goes way farther in persuading people than, you know, some sort of logical argument or some sort of thought experiment or these kinds of things. Those things may have convinced you as a libertarian, but they're not going to convince 90% of people.
All right. Well, you've lost me and Phil Labonte, but you have my interest reinvigorated by what you're talking about, what's happened over the last year and a half. So maybe if you can get us back, you know, maybe we can bring more people back to the Free State, but I'll be paying attention. I've got family there. You know, I have no specific ties to Utah other than my job. So I will keep an eye on what you guys got going there. But where can people follow you? Where can people keep up with you? I've got your Twitter bio in the description.
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Odyssey. My handle there is KAUFFJ. Follow the Free State Project on Twitter as well. That's Free State NH. And what I'll say is to anyone listening, like, you don't have to be persuaded. You just have to be curious. Come out for a week, come meet people, feel the energy, meet the people who are getting things done, and really experience it. And you'll be able to understand it much more, you know, than I did talking about it. And I'm willing to help you personally. So you can reach out to the Free State Project, and they'll help you. But if you want me to sort of be your personal guide and introduce you to people and that kind of thing, you can reach out to me personally, and I'm happy to do it.
All right. Well, thanks, Jeremy. We'll do this again sometime.
Yeah. Cheers.